Welcome to Just the Taste. I'm Scott Curry with Chef's Best. We gather to talk about the trends in marketing, retail, and production in food and beverage that are shaping the industry. Joining us today is Mike Cockrell. Since 1993, Mike has served as treasurer and CFO of Sanderson Farms. Prior to, Mike was a shareholder and member of the law firm Wise Carter Child & Carraway, Professional Association of Jackson, Mississippi. Mike Cockrell is a member of Sanderson Farms Executive Committee. Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Scott. I'm glad to be here.
All right. So share with our listeners, Mike, if you will, how Sanderson Farms joined from really, I think, humble beginnings, as I understand it, all the way back to 1947, to becoming, again, what I understand is to be the largest poultry producer in the United States.
Well, it was, we're actually now the third largest poultry producer in the United States, but we started as the smallest in South Mississippi. The name of the company is Sanderson Farms. Our current CEO enjoys the last name Sanderson, and he is the grandson of the gentleman that started the company, but he is the last member of the family involved in the company. Just as an aside, once he retires, there's no one left in the Sanderson family to pick up the mantle. There are plenty of other folks ready to do that, but not a Sanderson. But back in 1947, Joe's granddaddy bought the Purina feed franchise for South Mississippi, and he opened retail feed and seed stores in Jones County, Mississippi, which is where we're based today, and that's about 2 hours north of New Orleans. Since few people know exactly where Jones County is. And then he had another franchise in Hazelhurst, Mississippi, just south of Jackson. And that was a really good business for him. They built a feed mill, and Purina would tell them how to make the rations, and they would sell dog food and cattle feed and chicken feed and lots to farm animals, and they grew that business. And one day, I think it was an idea that actually came from Purina as a way to generate demand for feed. They suggested that their franchise owners start selling chickens. And you would sell the chicken. The theory was you would sell the chickens to the farmers who would then need to buy the feed, and they would come back to you and buy the feed, and you would boost your sales. And Joe Frank, who is Joe's dad and his dad, Uncle Dewey, he is called, or remembered at by, they thought that was a good idea, so they built a real small hatchery, and they would hatch. They'd buy the eggs, and they would hatch out the baby chicks and sell those to farmers. And sure enough, the farmers would come by the feed. The problem came in when those chickens got mature, and the farmers would come to Mr. Sanderson and say, "What do I do now?" And Mr. Sanderson took the idea a step further and said, "Well, I'll buy those chickens back from you." Took them down to New Orleans, and then there was also a processing plant in Mobile, which were the two closest processing plants that would buy live chickens and process them and sell them. And so he did that and started selling those live chickens to the processing plant, and lo and behold, made pretty good money doing that. And after doing that for a few years, they actually were making more money in the chicken business than they were the feed business, so they sold the franchise and went full-time into the chicken business. They weren't satisfied with selling the chickens to somebody else, so they bought a processing plant that was maybe struggling a little bit up in Hazelhurst, Mississippi. Made pretty good money doing that, so they built the first processing plant the company built here in Laurel in 1961. And then the rest is history, really. They made good money doing that, and they bought a plant down in Hammond, Louisiana. Joe Sanderson came back to the company after graduating from Millsaps in 1969 and decided he would work for the company. And he worked his way up through the plant. He delivered baby chicks. He worked on the eviscerating line. He did everything everybody else in this company has done. And he worked his way up, and by the early 80s, he was director of sales at the general office, and he decided the company ought to buy a plant in Collins, Mississippi that was in financial trouble. They did, and then they bought a prepared foods plant in Jackson, and then probably the home or the really the turning point of the business was in 1987 when we went public. And when we went public, Joe was made president of the company. And they really went public, frankly, for some personal reasons related to some estate taxes and some estate planning. And, you know, they had gotten big enough that there were going to be some estate tax issues maybe, and they needed a way to establish the value of the company. And going public at the time was very popular, not just for us, but among other poultry companies and farming companies that had a difficult time valuating the company. You could go public and have a market for it, so it was easy to do. But then once they did, Joe felt a compulsion as the president of a public company to grow, and to grow rapidly, because in his mind, I think correctly so, our job as managers of a public company is first to earn for our shareholders a fair return. And the way to do that, obviously, is to grow the company and make it more valuable. And we began executing a growth plan that has quadrupled the size of the company since we went public, and quadrupled the size of the stock price. And it's worked. It's been we built the last of the last nine plants that have been built in our industry. We built eight of them. Many other companies have chosen different ways to grow, but we built our own assets and grown that way. But it's been an exciting journey. We actually just celebrated our 70th year. Had a big old cake downstairs, and then everybody went straight back to work. Low-key celebration, but one that we all got kind of reflective on, and it was a lot of fun.
Outstanding. And you've, I believe, been involved in the company since 93, so I suspect you'll remain humble on this, but I'm sure you've played a large role in that growth.
No, I really hadn't. yeah, you know, I was a young lawyer in Jackson, Mississippi in 1984. I went to Jackson to practice law, and that's how I got connected to the company. When the company went public in 1987, I was working for the law firm that represented the company. So I got to know Joe and my predecessor really well. My predecessor was a much better CFO than I am and had been here longer, frankly. He was the only CFO the company had ever had before me, so I'm only the second. Fortunately, they don't have a lot of benchmarks to compare me against, but when I talked to Joe, I said, well, you know, I was thinking to myself, why would I quit practicing law when that's what I trained so hard for and do this? And he just made it sound so exciting. At the time, we had just opened a plant in Mississippi, and he was thinking about going to Texas. And I thought, you know, this could really turn out to be fun. So, yeah, I did it, and I hadn't looked back.
Great. And, you know, we want to talk a lot about taste and you know, the type of chicken and product that Sanderson produces. But I think before we do that, could you help our listeners understand what it means to be the third largest producer of poultry in the country? Because if you could share some of the numbers there, they're quite staggering in my view, in terms
yeah,
of the
you
amount
know,
of chickens produced.
They are. I think a lot of people, they blink a couple of times when you talk about the number of head of chickens that we process. And we process 13 million chickens a week. And to put that in perspective, you know, Tyson, who is the largest, they're 2.5 times that. I mean, they're much bigger and much larger than we are. But 13 million is plenty. And we have plants. Four plants in Texas, one in Louisiana, and of course our home base of Mississippi, where we have four plants, one in South Georgia, and two processing plants in North Carolina. So we're spread out over the entire Southeast, but we sell 4.5 billion pounds of chicken a year, and we sell those pounds primarily in the United States, and even to narrow that down even further, primarily in our footprint, which is the Southeast. But we sell food service chicken that gets consumed away from home, whether it's at a mom and pop restaurant or a white tablecloth. We sell that product all over the country, and we export 20% of our pounds or so to countries around the world. Mexico is our largest trading partner, but we sell to Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan and places in the Middle East, Cuba, trading partners all over the world. But it is a big operation. We have 15,000 employees, and they're all based in the United States. All of our chickens are grown, fed, processed, and cared for in the United States. So we're certainly a domestic company, but we sell around the world.
Like you're quite literally, you know, feeding and growing our own population. It's a pleasure to think about.
It really is, isn't it? It is.
Now, I think we'd call it a tagline here. Your company's tagline is "Good, Honest Chicken." So, share with me what that means and how you arrived at that, kind of communication of value to the customers.
Yeah. Okay. Honesty obviously can mean different things to different people, and we have an executive committee here. It's made up of 12 people, men and women, who manage different parts of the company. Our director of sales, the guy that manages our live chickens, the guy that manages our processing plant, the lady that does all of our marketing, and the young lady that does all of our communications, me and Joe and Lampkin, our president. So we all sit around the room and make day-to-day decisions that affect the company. So we get together every now and then and do team building and strategic planning, which we do once a year to try to kind of decide where the company is going to go. We always sit down at the beginning of that meeting and look at what we call our ground rules. And those ground rules have nothing to do with our vision, nothing to do with our strategy. They're not documented in any place. They're just the rules that we manage the business by, just amongst us. This is what's important to us. And the first one that's always put up on the whiteboard is honesty. And if we're going to do this, you got to be honest with me and tell me where I'm wrong or where you think I am. You got to be honest about, how stupid you think my idea might be, how difficult it might make your life, good, bad, indifferent. You got to be honest. Everything else will work itself out. Start with honesty. And that's true not only amongst the executive committee, but it's true with your employees. And I'm serious, and I know it sounds kind of like a cliche, but if you're honest with each other and your customers and your vendors and your consumers, everything else kind of work itself out. But be honest, work hard. And there's some other things on those ground rules, striving for superior performance, trust, success, some of the things you would expect, but the top is honesty. And that's true in our marketing campaign and how we try to position our product. Good, honest chicken to us means you're transparent in about everything you do with that chicken, about how it's raised, how it lives, how you market the product, how you think it's going to taste, that it's going to be fresh. You're honest about everything. Frankly, that can be swimming upstream some days, and we feel that way now to some extent because we have taken a path with our live production that is consistent with our values and what we consider to be our morals, but it's not necessarily, if you were a marketing company, what you would choose. But it's honest to us, and we're being honest about who we are when we raise our chickens the way we do. We treat them when they're sick, but it's honest. So we want to be honest about that. You go on our social media, and we lay it out there. Here's what we do. Here's why. Yes, we know there are some companies that are doing it a different way. That's fine for them. The consumer needs choice for sure. And there are some organizations that take issue with what we do and think that what we are doing is hurtful for some. But here's why we disagree with that. And you're honest about that, and you're honest with them too. And at the end of the day, that's why we describe our product that way, because that's the way we try to do it. That's the way we try to manage the company every day.
Hmm. It's a strong North Star to have, most certainly. And it's, led to a lot of success, if nothing else, but also quality food. So we want to talk a little bit about some of your production processes. And, I'm going to bring, I think, a wheelbarrow full of assumptions here to the table that I hope that you'll knock down through some education about chicken. And I think chicken, by and large, has a reputation, and I stress that word reputation because I don't know if this is true. We're going to find out here, but has a reputation for being bland and something that requires added flavoring during, preparation or to produce uniqueness, which may not be a positive thing, depending on your perspective as a consumer. I say that suggesting that the perception of chicken being bland helps me because I have a 5-year-old and a 9-year-old. So we can prepare it how we like. It's a good base, if you will, to work off of. And some have suggested that this has been over the years because of a shift to mass production. Again, all this may or may not be true, but I think the question here is this perception a concern to you as a company? That surely wants to avoid some level of commodification and maintain that value proposition, not only being 100% natural, but all around taste. So I know that's a lot to unpack, but, I think we've got a perception that chicken is bland, and that we're hopelessly in a mass production world where we have to resign ourselves to that fact. Yet I suspect that you have a slightly different opinion about, how chicken can and should taste and the processes and steps that you take to ensure that.
Yeah. I will take issue with it a little bit, of course. And we would prefer to describe it not as bland, but as versatile. Chicken, you can do a lot with. You can barbecue it, you can bake it, you can fry it, you can marinate it or not. One thing, going back to the honesty deal, we sell our chicken as chicken. It doesn't have anything else added to it. There is no salt. There is no water. We walked away from one of the largest purchasers of fresh chicken in the world one time a few years ago because they wanted us to go to a program where we would marinate that product and inject it with some what they called broth, but really all it was salt water, and it would make the chicken taste different, and it would also, under their theory, make it more moist. But we did some tests, and you really didn't achieve that benefit. But that's not what we do. We just sell chicken, and it doesn't have any water added to it, doesn't have any salt, no marinade. It's just chicken. And yeah, I think it tastes good. I grilled some night before last. I put salt, pepper, and a little bit of olive oil. That was all I did, and it was fantastic. The texture is for some better than the red meats. Many people, and I don't know how old you are, but many, many people that describe themselves as millennials prefer chicken to red meat because they consider it to be cleaner meat. You have a much lower carbon footprint to produce it. And not only that, it's healthier. As we all know, when I was coming of age, the United States Surgeon General came out with a report that said, you eat red meat, it's going to kill you. And the consumption per person, per capita in the United States of red meat and chicken began a course opposite of what it had been. Red meat was consumed by and large twice as many pounds per person as chicken. And beef started coming down, chicken started coming up, and now Americans consume almost 3 times as many pounds of chicken as they do red meat or as they do beef because it is cleaner and it is more versatile. And to be versatile, it's got to have a good taste to it. I'm not going to say it needs to be bland, but you can make chicken be so many different things. It can be chicken parmesan one night and fried chicken nuggets the next night and grilled with a barbecue sauce the next, and you don't feel like you're having the same meal every night, but you're eating the same clean meat with lower cholesterol, you know, better protein, cleaner protein. And there's a lot of truth to that. We have found since the 2008 Great Recession that consumers, particularly of the millennial generation, have not only started shopping at the grocery store more than going out, but choosing chicken much more frequently than red meat because they perceive it to be a cleaner, more healthier meat. Mm. And, but, you know, the chicken taste, you are what you eat, and you can change the flavor profile of any animal by what you feed it. We feed chickens a healthy, balanced diet of corn and soybeans and vitamins. And I learned when I came here, I didn't know this before, you can actually change the color of the meat by what you feed it. You can make it a yellower muscle or a whiter muscle. And I also learned that different people around the United States have a different preference. People in the Northeast prefer to go into a grocery store, look at their package of chicken, and see that it has a whitish color to it. In Mississippi, they like a golden color. In fact, our first logo was called Miss Goldie, and she was a little chicken that had an umbrella and a purse, and she was real cute, but she's gone. We phased her out. She may live to see another day, because when we moved to Texas, they prefer whiter meat. So you can feed the chicken, and it's going to look and taste a little bit different. But we think it tastes good.
That's interesting. Interesting. So you mentioned, you know, what you feed can shift and help you grow chickens that are tasteful, or as you say, you know, delicious on your website. What else does Sanderson Farms do along the way to influence and cultivate flavor? You mentioned feed of soybeans and corn, but I imagine it probably starts before that a little bit with the breeding and the original stock from that. What are some of the steps that you really take and hone in on?
Yeah, we do. We're what many refer to as a vertically integrated business. So by that, we mean we control everything. We hatch the egg. We manufacture the feed that we feed to the chicken. We pick the chicken up. We take it to the processing plant. We process it. We deliver it. We sell it. We do everything in the process. The only three things we buy on the outside are corn or grain, corn, soy, and the breeder chickens. We're not in that business. That is an entirely different, more scientific-based business where they are selecting genes that go into the breeder flocks that lay the fertile hatching eggs that then become our chickens. So we buy those breeder chickens outside the company. And the genetics of the chicken have improved by leaps and bounds. And over the last 20 years, the chickens now grow more efficiently. They're healthier, and they taste better. You can choose a chicken that has a genetic profile just to grow faster, you know, to convert feed to meat more efficiently, or to grow, you know, in a particular way. And that will, yeah, they do. They taste different. And we think the breeds we use give us that taste advantage over some others. And then again, most importantly, though, is, you know, what you feed that chicken, what its diet is, to make sure you get all the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, calories, energy levels, you know, all of that. We have a PhD nutritionist who sits at her desk every day formulating the diet based on the weather and how old the chicken is, but also based on taste, because we have a group in Jackson, and that's all they do is test our product for taste, for tenderness, and they, you know, they'll do a resistance test on a piece of cooked chicken meat to make sure that the tenderness is there the way it's supposed to be. And if it's not, for some reason, they start digging into figuring out what's going on, whether it's something on the live grow out farm, something in the feeding, you know, something in the way we've managed the bird that has contributed to that. And they're constantly testing and tweaking our program. for them to get to that perfect taste and perfect texture.
Amazing to think about. You have that vertical integration that allows you to maintain the kind of stringent quality control all the long way. And I can only imagine some of the bright minds and experience of those folks that are making those, you know, minute adjustments that can, I'm trying to remember here, was it 13 million chickens per week or
that's
something?
Right.
There's a lot at stake.
Right. And that's one of our advantages over the red meat industry, frankly. You know, the red meat industry, and I know a lot of red meat farmers. I live in Mississippi, so I know a lot, and they're great, good people, and they do a good job. But so if you're a feedlot, though, where you're going to bring in the cows and finish them on feed for the last 2 weeks of their life and then sell them to a processing plant, you go buy those cattle from all over the place, from a cow-calf operator who may have 50 cows here in South Mississippi and one in Texas that has 500 cows. You don't know what they fed those cows. You don't know what their watering program was like. You don't know what their genetics is like. And as a result, they don't get the same uniform, sized, taste, quality product that we do, because they can't manage all of that you just described. So I think it gives us an advantage.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you're apparently adjusting food based on whether it's sunny or cloudy, which I know I'm jokingly oversimplifying the process.
No, that's true, though. It is true.
So shifting gears a little bit, we like to talk to folks about some of these macro shifts that are occurring in the industry and consumer behavior, and learn a little bit about your perspective and how you may be adjusting. And the nature of retail is certainly shifting with e-commerce, home delivery, et cetera. And some food manufacturing industries might be affected more than others with this. And related to this shift, which includes the shifts in consumer behavior and expectations, right? Everything from wanting things customized to on demand to, as you mentioned, becoming more socially conscious. What are the conversations you are having with retailers these days related to this? I would imagine that Sanderson Farms chickens are, in a lot of different end products, everything from wrapped by the pound to perhaps in soups or cans, I'm not sure. But, given where you are along this entire chain, and given that consumers are changing the way that they shop at retail and also taking some of that retail and turning it into e-commerce, what are some of the high level conversations that you're having, given that if I may, there is a traditional aspect to your industry? Certainly you discredit that by talking about the science of things and everything, but in the end, what you are doing is growing and converting feed to chicken and calories. Yet I can't imagine that you're immune or blind to this change in how consumers are shopping as well. So if you could share just what are some of the conversations you're having relative to these seismic shifts in the industry?
Yeah, really good question. And any company worth its salt is having those discussions, because maybe not while I'm here, but certainly the next generation of managers will benefit if we start talking about that now, because just as chicken is preferred among millennials, millennials also are literally, as you just described, changing the way, the retail delivery system is going to work. We have historically been, our customers have been the traditional retail grocery stores and food service distributors like Sysco and U.S. Food Service, who distribute product to restaurants, and that product is obviously consumed away from home, maybe delivered. But we've talked to our customers about how, if, when, and where they're going to try to do that. Some of our customers are, testing home delivery. And then, of course, you've got the Amazon Whole Foods deal that no one yet knows exactly how that's going to transform the food industry, particularly the retail grocery industry. And Amazon has a reputation for being a disruptor, and that's what's made them a great company, and they are. But we have marketing people and sales people who are looking diligently at that. We had a board meeting 2 weeks ago and did some strategic planning, and that question came up several times over the course of 2 days in really different contexts, not just the sales context, but how are we preparing for that? You know, right now, at least, but I emphasize right now, many of the, and most of, based on our research, the consumers that are opting for home delivery, for example, are using that for the items they buy in the middle of the store, the soup, the toilet paper, the paper towels, aluminum foil, even Cheerios, and, you know, stuff that are in a box. Mm-hmm. They still want to look at their lettuce, and they still want to pick their own tomatoes, and thank goodness, they still want to pick their own chicken. Mm. We've got one retailer who I guess I won't call names, but they're a really good one, really good retailer, make a lot of money, considered one of the best in the country. And they're testing a program where they will allow their customers to go on their phone and look at a package of chicken and say, I want that one. And they get to pick the one they want. Now, for the right to do that, they have to pick it up within a particular period of time, maybe 2 hours or something, so that they don't have to take it off the shelf for very long and that kind of thing. But, you know, I think that's going to be slow. I think getting to the point where people are comfortable buying their meat and their fruit and their vegetables that way, you know, I think we're still a way away. But we're going to get there. And I've told our guys, and our CEO has told our guys, we need to be the first there, and we need to start working with these people now. And they, you know, they talk with some of these e-commerce and e-delivery companies. Most of the ones we're talking to, though, deliver cooked product. They don't deliver fresh yet. Mm-hmm. But that is coming, and we'll have to be ready for it. I don't know what all the answers are. I'm 60, and I'm not a millennial, and I go to the grocery store, and I look at my chicken. I actually squeeze it and look at it, and I look at the sell-by date and whether it looks fresh, and I'm afraid I'm in the generation that's going to be too lost and stupid to do this. But my daughter does it, and she lives in Austin, Texas, and every retailer she buys from, she calls ahead, and they have it out in a basket ready for her to pick up so she doesn't have to take her kid out of the car. And that is where it's headed. And we've got to be a part of that, or our competition is going to get there first, and we don't want that.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah, you're right. There is something about wanting to, when it comes to fresh meats, that you want to hold it, look at it. And I think, you know, I still feel more comfortable buying an apple that I've held and looked at than asking someone else to select the apple or the avocado or whatnot for me.
Yeah. I want to squeeze my avocado. I want to know that it is at the peak of freshness and peak of development, and it's not too mushy and not too hard. It's got to be just right.
Mm. So a few things before we let you go here. You've been very generous with your time, but I can't let you go without tapping into some of your experience. You've been with the company now, I think it's close to 25, 26 years. I've imagined that you've learned a few lessons along the way. One you mentioned right at the outset, which is clearly honesty as a guiding principle has served you well, and I suspect has served you well outside of business as well. But what are some of the key lessons you've learned, or perhaps some of the other guiding principles or mantras that you rely on as a successful executive of a company that has grown so much over the years and adhered to its values? What kind of grounds you in your perhaps your management style or just business principles?
Yeah, good question, and thanks for asking it. Honesty is that's a guiding principle that I think. I hope I brought to the company, but I certainly have learned a lot from the company about that. And gosh, it's true in every facet of the business. Obviously, in my particular role as chief financial officer, I deal with our shareholders every day. And I have found that, you know, whether it's we have these analysts that follow our company and they write research reports on whether or not to buy, sell, or hold Sanderson Farm stock. And, you know, I'm told often from them, and this is a testament to Joe, really, that when we go to these conferences, when we do our conference calls, they ask everybody else the same questions, but they always know they're going to get an honest, straightforward answer from Joe, and it's going to be exactly what he thinks. It may be, guys, the market's fixing to go to hell in a handbasket because of X, Y, Z, not, it might get a little weak, and maybe, but we'll, you know, it's going to be what it's going to be, and that has built a lot of goodwill, I think, among our shareholders base. And along those same lines, one thing that I learned early on when I went through our first down cycle, and our industry goes through down cycles, when corn is $8 a bushel, you can be as good an operator as there is in the world, and you're still not going to make any money. In fact, you're going to lose money because chickens don't eat little green peas. They eat corn and soybean meal. And if those two grains get expensive, there's nothing you can do about it. But this, and this is one thing I've learned, push through it and don't change anything you're doing. Run the company the same if you're making $50 million a month or if you're losing $50 million a month. Run it the same way. Your people will appreciate it. You don't lay anybody off. You don't change the business. Push through it. And on the other side, you know, your company's not going to be different. It's going to be the same, and that's important. But, gosh, the most important thing I've learned is that it's just chicken. We're not doing rocket science. We're not curing cancer, and we're not trying to solve for world peace. We may be trying to feed the world, but it's just chickens at the end of the day. And the most important thing for my people and for me, and sometimes I have to remind myself of this, is what I go to at home, and my kids, and now my grandkids, and that's what's important. Come to work really, really hard, but at the end of the day, this is just chickens, and pay attention to your life, and it's been a good mantra for me.
Some sage advice there. So what I heard is don't monitor the price of corn every hour and freak out accordingly.
No, man, it's just chicken. Don't worry. That's right. Not like I can do anything about it. We can learn a lot from our brothers and sisters who are in 12-step programs. You know, the very first thing of every day is, you know, I can't control that. Don't do it. You know, I can't control the price of corn. I can control what we do here at the office, but... Mm-hmm.
And just to reflect again, as I want to make sure it's a take home point, which is as successful as you've been at business, I gather that your family is more important to you than anything, and to never lose sight of that as well.
Absolutely.
Super. So maybe one last question before we let you go. What's next at Sanderson Farms? Anything that's got you particularly excited?
Yeah, more of the same. We're going to open a brand new poultry complex in Tyler, Texas in January of 19. We began construction of that complex last fall. It will take us to 14 million chickens a week instead of 13, actually a little more than 14. And we're looking right now for the next site and where we might build the next plant for the company. It's just fun. In 1997, when we built our first Texas plant, we processed 722 million pounds of chicken. In 2020, we're going to process almost 5 billion pounds, you know, more than six times bigger. And that's just because we just plugged along, you know, keep building, keep adding. Stock was worth, $13 a share in 97, and today it's worth 120, and it's been as high as 100. So our shareholders have benefited. That benefits our employees as well because they make money when we make money. Yeah, it's just been fun. The next venture is going to be more of the same. It's just a lot of fun to do it, and young managers get to do it, and they get to go find a new and better way, which they do every time. Those young kids find a new and better way to do it every time we open a new plant.
Outstanding. Well, I want to thank you for your time. You gave us a great inside look at Sanderson Farms, which I'm searching for the right word here, but there's something about it's a quintessential American company. I think that, you know, humble roots and beginnings down there in Mississippi, and has maintained growth all the way along the way while remaining honest and providing what we need, all of us at our dinner tables each night and as we go on. So again, thank you very much for joining us, Mike, and best of luck to you.
Thank you, Scott. Best of luck to you, and thank you so much for spending some time with me. I enjoyed it.
Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on Just a Taste, a Chef's Best production. Join us again next time as we talk to more experts in marketing, retail, and production in the food and beverage industry. You can always visit us at chefsbest.com to learn more.